Hello, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Wednesday, January 22nd, 2013, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That's me. We kicked off the new year a couple of weeks ago with some wickedly informative and enriching sex education. So now, let's turn our attention to the sexually worrisome, shall we? I have some swell Q&A in store for you today, the first of the new year, and each of my correspondents is eager to share his or her sex and relationship concerns with us, and I will do my level best to make my responses informative, enriching, and maybe even a little entertaining. That's what I do. But before we begin, a word from our sponsor. This week's podcast is brought to you by DrDickSexAdvice.com and DrDickSexToyReviews.com. That's right, sex fans, our sponsor today is me. Think of this as our very own winter pledge drive. You see, I want to call your attention to a standing invitation for everyone in my audience to support and underwrite these shows. I'm exceptionally proud of the quality programming I've been bringing you, my international audience. For over the last 5 years, I've presented a variety of extraordinarily informative, enriching, and entertaining shows, interesting interviews, enlightening Q&A, and even some fun product reviews. I mean, where else can you find this sort of diverse, sex-positive programming? And all of this always comes to you absolutely free. Okay, so right about now, you're probably asking yourself, hey, Dr. Dick, how can I help support and underwrite this effort? Well, I'll tell you. Just mosey on over to either one of my sites, DrDickSexAdvice.com or DrDickSexToyReviews.com, and look for the donate button. It's a blue heart-shaped icon in the sidebar. Click on it and make your contribution. Any amount will do. But those folks donating $50 or more will receive a swell thank you gift. Excellent personal lube, smutty porn DVDs, wonderful sex toys, or some delicious erotica. Be the first one on your block to join me in bringing the world this fun, informative, and enlightening programming. Okay, on with the show. Let's start with some email first, shall we? First up is an exchange I had with a young woman who identifies herself as Holly. Well, actually, at first I had to guess her age because she didn't include that with her first message. She writes, I had protected sex on 16th of November. That is the day I think it was. My boyfriend wore a condom and didn't come either. It didn't last very long, and that's the second time of having sex. I used Durex condoms. We checked there were no holes or splits in the condom. The condom was not broken. I am not on the pill. Is there any chance of pregnancy from this? I had my period on the 8th of November. It was 5 or 6 days early from my last period on the 11th of October. I had sex for the first time on the 28th of October, and I was wondering why my period came early. It usually never does. Also, when would my next period be if my last one was on the 8th of November? That one came 29 days after my other one in October. My cycle is generally 35 days long. 35 days from my last period would be the 13th or 14th of December. Last week, I also made my boyfriend ejaculate for the first time through oral. Could I get pregnant from this? He gave me no oral. About 6 hours after he ejaculated, we went swimming. Could I get pregnant from sperm on a towel after it was left lying around for 30 minutes to an hour? Is there any chance of pregnancy through any of these things? Thank you. Holy cow, Holly. Thanks for your message. Let me answer your questions first before I make a couple of observations and comments later on. If you are accurately reporting your protected sex experience on the 16th of November, then there is no chance that you could get pregnant. You guys used a condom, the condom did not break or fail, and your partner didn't even ejaculate. I can't say why your period came early in November. Is it just coincidence? Gosh, who knows? You mentioned that the sex you had on November 16th was your second time, and that your first sexual experience was on October 28th. But you don't mention how that went for you. Did you use a condom the first time, too? I also can't predict when your next period will happen. There are so many things that can alter a woman's cycle, stress and anxiety being among them. And you, my dear, sound stressed and anxious, and I guess for good reason, huh? This whole worrying about getting knocked up can be such a bummer. So you say you blew your boyfriend. Did he come in your mouth? Even if he did, there's no chance of getting pregnant from oral sex alone. You see, in order for you to get pregnant, the live sperm needs to get inside your vagina and then into your uterus to fertilize one of your eggs. You know that stuff you swallow doesn't get into your vagina or uterus, right? Since you're not here to answer, I'm going to go way out on a limb here and guess that you have at least this much information about how your body works. So on to the swimming event. You seem to be suggesting that there was sperm on the towel. Did I understand that correctly? How did the spooge get on the towel, I wonder? Well, at any rate, here's the deal about sperm. It doesn't survive very long outside of one's body. They are very delicate little creatures. There's no chance that any of the little buggers would have survived on a towel for 30 minutes to an hour. And remember what I said about how a woman gets pregnant? Sperm has to be inside the woman's vagina and then her uterus for pregnancy to occur. I assume you didn't stick the towel in your vagina, right? I think I answered all your questions. Now for some observations and comments, if you don't mind. You don't mention your age. Sounds to me like you're quite young. It also sounds to me like you're missing some really important fundamental information about how your body works. Now at this point, when I wrote back to Holly, I included a link to a YouTube video that explains, by way of cartoons, how conception happens. It's unfortunate that you started the whole sex thing before you knew the fundamentals. It's not particularly unusual that you did. Lots of kids do. But that doesn't make it a good thing. Isn't it high time for you to get the information you are so sorely missing? And I'm not just talking about the pregnancy thing, although that would be really helpful. I mean, besides being much better informed about how your body works in general and your sex parts in particular, you will have more control over how and when you want to be sexual with a partner. Remember, it's your body we're talking about. You should have enough information about how it works and what is pleasurable and what isn't to determine what is best for you. Absolutely no one else has the right to make those decisions for you. But I assure you, they will make those decisions for you if you are not well enough informed to make them on your own. Finally, are you getting any pleasure out of these sexual encounters? Sounds to me like these events are mostly about pleasuring your boyfriend, and you are left with all the worry, concern, and anxiety. Listen, hon, I think boys are nice. I was one once, a very long time ago. But boys aren't generally concerned with anyone but themselves, especially when sex is involved. So it's up to you to assert yourself. Do nothing that you are not sure of. Hopefully, And certainly, if you insist upon it, your sex will be mutually pleasurable. If it's not, you're being ripped off. Now, if your boyfriend doesn't know how to pleasure you, maybe you need to show him how to pleasure you. And if you don't know how to pleasure yourself, so that you could show him what's what, then you have a whole lot of homework to do before you continue with your partnered sex. And this is where masturbation comes in. Find out how your parts work. Find out what works best for you in terms of stimulation. Give yourself lots and lots of orgasms so that you know how they feel. And don't settle for anything less when you are with a partner. Good luck. Now, a few days later, Holly responded. Hello. Thank you very much. Yes, it is true. I am 16 years old, nearly 17 in January. Thank you for your help. I will do my homework. Ha ha ha. Thank you, signed Holly. Next up, we hear from Weaver. She's 20, and she lives in California. Dear Dr. Dick, my name is Weaver, and I'm a 20-year-old omnisexual female. I honestly only call myself female because I was born with lady parts. I don't particularly identify anymore with one gender or the other. At present, I have a boyfriend, also 20, and this is where I need your help. We work rather well together, mentally, emotionally, and physically. The problem is, there seems to be a bit of a disconnect when we speak of gender and sexuality. On his end, he is what many might consider the typical male, so to speak. He's straight, and although not homophobic, he will completely lose his junk if anyone insinuates, even in jest, that he might be gay or even like gays. On my end, I see no difference between genders. Sure, some have dicks and some have pussies, but some people have freckles and some don't. That might sound cheesy, but I believe love and sexuality are of the soul, not of the bodies we happen to be assigned. I'm trying so hard to understand his view, but I just don't get it. And he doesn't seem to be able to understand my views either. Is there a way you can help us resolve this stalemate? I would be in your debt. Great hearing from you, Weaver. Great question, too. Looks like you are considerably more evolved than your boyfriend, don't you think? In fact, I'll go so far as to say that you're more highly evolved than 90%, if not more, of the population. I love the fact that the gender barriers are coming down. I love it that young folks, like yourself, are throwing off the shackles of the binary system of male and female and straight and gay. More power to ya. But that being said, you need to prepare yourself for a lot of resistance from those who have yet to sign off on this stuff. There are loads of people, and I'll be honest here, most are men, who can't or won't get behind the genderqueer movement no matter how hard you proselytize. The root of all this resistance is actually fear of, and maybe even hatred of, women. You see, in the worldview of most men, masculinity is a privilege, making it superior to femininity. To these men, it's an affront to their world order to see anyone try to level the gender playing field or even mix things up so that sex and gender roles aren't all cut and dried as they are now. A post-gender world, or even a world where all genders are equal, means these men will have to give up some of their privilege, and that's not going to happen without a fight. Does this smack of immense insecurity on the part of us menfolk? You bet it does. But there you have it. So here you are being all cool and progressive and saying things. Sure, some people have dicks and some have pussies, but some people have freckles and some don't. Well, I beg your pardon, young lady, but there ain't no comparison between cocks and freckles, and don't you ever forget it. You see where I'm going with that? This is just one thing that'll set most men on edge. Nothing more important than our Johnson, you see. And here's another thing. Some men are all too happy to cut their nose off to spite their face. They will hang on to their unenlightened mindset even if it means a shutdown in the bedroom. Strict sex roles and gender roles have most men in a stranglehold, and it's choking off a lot of potential joy and pleasure from their lives. I also feel it necessary to call you on something. I know you're trying to be kind to your boyfriend, but I think you are glossing over some stuff that you shouldn't. You can't hardly tell me that your man isn't homophobic in one breath and then in the next say he will completely lose his junk if anyone insinuates, even in jest, that he might be gay or even like gays. Darling, if that ain't a definition of homophobia, I want to know what is. Here's the deal. All us men, including all us gay men, have some vestiges of homophobia inside us, and some have a whole lot. It is regrettable, but that don't make it any less true. This fear we carry around inside of us can turn us inside out. It can get in the way of us accepting and loving ourselves for who we are, if we are indeed gay. And this fear can even lead us to all kinds of destructive antisocial behavior against others if we are straight. Clearly your boyfriend has issues. Really big issues. But I'm probably telling you something you already know deep down inside, huh? Frankly, I can't really see a way for the two of you to overcome the fundamental divide in your disparate world views. You either need to way lower your expectations of him and men like him and sink to the lowest common denominator, or he is going to have to do a whole bunch of reprogramming on himself. Is either of these options likely? I would guess not. Thing is, Weaver, you and your genderqueer identity represent the future. Your conservative, homophobic, heterosexual boyfriend represents the past. Frankly, I don't see how y'all can coexist. I'm not trying to say that he's a bad guy, except for the homophobic part. On the contrary, he might be a really nice guy. It's just that, at some point, and maybe it's already happened, you will push his buttons one too many times, and he will lash out. Maybe that's what you meant when you said lose his junk. And I predict that when push comes to shove, as it pretty sure will, you are going to be in jeopardy. Please be careful. Good luck. Next, we hear from Tammy. She writes from Indianapolis. I don't know her age. She says, I need help. A few years ago, my husband asked me to have sex with a well-endowed young black man. Well, I did. And although it was to be a one-time thing, I met the guy behind my husband's back a few times. During these meetings, he didn't use condoms and took pictures. He then started to introduce me to his friends, and eventually I submitted to having multiple men at the same time. This has continued for over 4 years, and I have been getting gangbanged by black men regularly now, and condoms are never used. Most of these situations are with mostly different black men each time, and I can only estimate the number of men I have had sex with has to be approaching 400 to 500, as each time it includes 5 to 15 men. I have to admit that being constantly stimulated by one after another is an incredible feeling and quite addictive. I know I need to stop all of this, for obvious reasons, and I've been very lucky as far as the STDs go. How do I stop? ? Please help. I love it. I absolutely love it. What a marvelously fanciful story, Tammy. I will surely include it in an upcoming podcast. Of course, I don't believe a word of it. The problem with outrageous stories like yours, Tammy, is that there's never any hint of moderation. Have you made it just a tad more believable, you would have stood a chance of convincing me. But really, 15 heavy hung black dudes are gangbanging you all at the same time. However do you walk home, darling? And lucky with STDs? You think? I'd call that fucking miraculous. And where is the hobby during these marathon sessions? And not just a couple of months of this, or even a couple of years, but 4 years running. How you do go on, ma'am. You must be exhausted. All I want to know is, when did you find time to write this? My advice? Okay, here goes. Don't stop. I think you should channel your fantasy life into writing erotica. I bet you'd be really good at it. Good luck. Finally today, I want to introduce you to someone with a story to tell. Michael is 52. He was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis 4 years ago. 2 years ago, his disease process escalated to a point where he was confined to a motorized wheelchair. This past year, he has had several MS-related setbacks that have kept him bedridden for nearly weeks at a time. Things have become so difficult that several months ago he was forced to sell his once thriving law practice. The few hours of work he can manage a week at his old firm are more frustrating than fulfilling for him. Mike is often depressed. He continually repeats his self-defeating mantra, "I'm not half the man I used to be." The superhuman support of his second wife, Marianne, and his son, Kyle, along with his beloved Seattle Seahawks, are the only things that keep him from killing himself, so he reports. The first time I met this couple, an exasperated Marianne tearfully reports how Mike's smoldering rage and bouts of sullenness terrorize the family. I love him, but he's got to get off his pity pot, or I'm going to walk and I'm going to take Kyle with me. Mike sheepishly acknowledges his disruptive behavior. His ruggedly handsome face distorts with shame. It's true. It's the damn MS. I just can't get it together. I feel like such a failure. When Mike and I have some one-on-one time together, I broach the topic of sex. Mike blanches. I start by asking him some very pointed questions about his intimate life with his wife. Mike responds, "I'm not used to such frank discussions about sex. I'm more comfortable with the locker room bravado that passes as sex talk for us guys. At least in that situation, I don't have to be honest. This is very intimidating. I'll be straight with you. I don't want to talk about this because I'm afraid you'll want to know how a gimp like me does it. I'm afraid that if you ask, I would have to tell you that a gimp like me no longer does it because he can't get it up anymore. I'd probably then have to tell you how frustrating it is for me not to be able to make love to my wife, and how this is a source of constant friction between Marianne and me, and how she accuses me of throwing out the baby with the bathwater, how she doesn't care if I have a hard-on. All she wants is for us to be close. So you see, if I told you all these things, I'd really be embarrassed, so I'm not going to say anything at all." "I see," I responded. "Do you really see yourself as a gimp? Or is that just a term of endearment that you use for yourself? What do you think? Just look at me. I'm one fine specimen of virile manhood, wouldn't you say?" Mike turns bright red. I can't tell if it's rage or embarrassment. Maybe it's both. Okay, Mike, have it your way. Maybe you are GIMP, although I wouldn't have guessed it by just looking. I then decided to tell Mike about another client I had years ago. He had an even more advanced case of MS than Mike. His wife claimed that despite being a very large man and being bedridden, he was a remarkably good lover. She said he had a vivid imagination and an exceptionally talented mouth. He was affectionate and gentle, and there was absolutely no hint of a chimp on his shoulder. My former client used to say that his pleasure came from giving pleasure to others. Mike apologized. I'm not myself today, or maybe this is what I've become. I know my wife and son think so. So is all of this rage just about being unable to have an erection? Us men folk are so amazing. I go on to tell Mike that many women don't care at all if their partner has an erection or not. In fact, most women report that when their partner's penis is hard, it generally means only one thing, and it rarely is about them. It's the old get it up, get it on, get it off, and roll over routine, which is not particularly fulfilling for a woman. While losing the ability to have an erection may be a humbling experience for a guy, his female partner may have an altogether different experience. For her, it might signal the possibility of some really good sex in the offing. I ask, how do you feel about your oral sex techniques, Mike? If Marianne wanted you to pleasure her orally, would you be comfortable in doing that? Maybe she would prefer hand stimulation. You know that other MS client I just mentioned? He couldn't use his hands very well, so his wife used them for him. She would take his hand and stimulate herself with it. He loves it. Would you feel comfortable if Marianne used your hand like that? How well are you able to communicate your needs for sex and intimacy with Marianne? Are there any specific issues that get in the way of asking for what you need? We stopped talking about sex about the same time I got six. Actually, we never really discussed it at all. What generally happens is Marianne brings up the topic, I get angry, she gets hurt, and that's how discussions about sex go in our house. I wish I could tell her how I really feel, how ashamed I am, not for just being a bully, but also for being such a coward. I wouldn't even know how to begin such a conversation. I can't seem to get past saying I'm sorry. I'm sorry, all right. Really freaking sorry. I'm afraid of what would happen if I opened this can of worms. Would I ever be able to look her in the eye again? Sometimes I wish I were dead. So you're not talking to your wife? Are you talking to your doctor about your erection concerns? Nope. Just figured there wasn't anything to talk about. Besides, it's too goddamn embarrassing to admit. Listen, Mike, you may want to reconsider that. Here's my advice. First, begin a dialogue with Marianne. Let her know that you are serious about working through some of your problems as a couple. I'm here to help if you need someone to guide the conversation. Second, contact your doctor as soon as possible and initiate a frank discussion about your erection concerns. A great deal of progress has been made recently in understanding and treating male erectile dysfunction. Now, most men occasionally experience the inability to have an erection, but repeated problems, whether they are organic or situational, constitute what we once referred to as impotence. Men with chronic erection problems are often too embarrassed to ask for help, and they may not have the impetus to do so if they're not partnered. So statistics on how widespread this concern is among us guys is hard to come by, no pun intended. Getting an erection for a man is like lubricating for a woman. Both processes combine complex emotional and biological functions. So it's clear that either a physiological or psychological problem can interfere in the arousal stage of the sexual response cycle for either a woman or a man. For example, a relationship problem, depression, anxiety, prescription medications, excessive alcohol consumption, a hormone imbalance, cardiovascular disease, a neurological problem, being overweight, even some over-the-counter cold and allergy medications, and something as simple as a poor diet can contribute to arousal dysfunction. As you undoubtedly know, major breakthroughs in treating erection problems were made by chance discovery in the mid-1990s. A researcher who was studying the effects of a new heart medication noticed a remarkable side effect in some of his male subjects. Erections! When Viagra hit the market, it revolutionized erectile dysfunction therapy. It's important to note that this medication, as well as other erectile dysfunction meds out there, are erection enhancers, not erection inducers. I say that because without proper stimulation, these medications will not cause an erection on their own. There are some reported side effects to these medications, and one can only get them by prescription, so you'd better talk to your doctor as soon as possible. So you see, Mike, there are options. Stop thinking about what used to be and start working at finding out what is currently possible. If you can't take any of the ED medications, there are still other options, like a penis ring and a pump. And if these things don't work, there's still no need to go without partnered sex and pleasuring. There are erogenous zones all over and in your body. Your erection-centric sex life may be over, but there is so much more available to you if you only give yourself and Marianne a chance to make the discoveries. Why not give it a try? I mean, how much time do you have left? Don't let the issues continue to contaminate your marriage and short-circuit the intimacy that is still available to you. Marianne deserves better, and so do you. I'll continue to be available to you as a coach and a guide if you wish. But there's no need to go without any of this alone if you don't want to. Now get out there and make something pleasurable happen. You won't regret it. Good luck. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. So glad you could join me. Tune in next time for more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Sex Advice and Dr. Dick's Sex Toy Reviews. Simply put, I need your help to continue to provide the shows like the one you just heard. But you may be asking yourself, hey, why should I make a donation? Well, I'll tell you. Infrastructure and administrative costs for a site like this are astronomical. So if you like what you see and hear, if you enjoy all the wonderful features of DrDickSexAdvice.com and DrDickSexToyReviews.com, then I invite you to make a modest one-time donation online. We suggest a donation of between $20 and $50, but any amount will be gladly accepted. This is a one-time donation. There are no automatic credit card renewals or processing fees, and you can be certain that every dime you donate will go to support this valuable sex-positive effort. Besides, those folks donating $50 or more get a swell gift. Finally, your donation underscores your social conscience. Your sponsorship helps disseminate badly needed sex education and sexual enrichment messages throughout the entire world. I thank you in advance for your generosity. Okay, until next time, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.